This is All Things Considered from NPR News. Guy Raz is away. I'm Audie Cornish. The president's bipartisan deficit commission hit the finish line this week, and the reaction from Capitol Hill was, well, let commission co-chair Alan Simpson describe it.
We took a big banana and threw it into the gorilla cage, and the gorilla has picked it up like they do. They peel it, mash it, play with it, but they will eat some.
Just how big a bite lawmakers want to take right now is unclear, but it's our cover story today, the so-called adult conversation over deficit and the debt. First, we'll go to Capitol Hill, where Senate Democrats forced two votes today on extending the Bush-era tax cuts for everyone but the wealthy. NPR's David Wellner joins us with the details.
It was entirely expected that these votes would fail. One of them would have capped the amount of income eligible for tax cuts at $250,000 a household. The other would have raised that cap to $1 million per household. But they both fell seven votes shy of the 60 they would have needed to advance. A few Democrats joined every single Republican who voted in voting against the measures. And Republican leader Mitch McConnell was pretty scornful of the whole exercise today.
Meaningless show votes and anti-business rhetoric won't do anything to make the situation better. This Saturday session is a total waste of the American people's time.
Yes, but New York Democrat Charles Schumer made it clear that these votes had another purpose. They were also meant to portray Republicans as catering to the millionaires whose taxes would have gone up had these measures passed.
And over the next year, when they come to the floor and talk about deficit reduction, they will be reminded that they chose $300 billion in tax breaks for the very wealthy, not paid for, increasing the deficit over any other priority.
Okay, David, but these tax cuts are scheduled to expire on December 31st. So what are the chances of this being dealt with before then?
Well, I don't think there's much of a chance that either Democrats or Republicans would allow them to expire at the end of the year. Neither party wants to take the blame for taxes going up on January 1st. And in fact, today, President Obama called on lawmakers to work out a deal on taxes, as he said, in the next few days. So it's looking highly likely that there will be probably a temporary extension of all the Bush-era tax cuts, and along with that, an extension of lapsed unemployment benefits and probably a green light to go ahead with ratification of the START Treaty as part of the deal.
NPR's David Wellner on Capitol Hill. Thanks, David.
You're welcome, Audie.
The tax cut debate is dwarfed by a bigger conversation about the deficit and the national debt. And there's one thing members of Congress agree on. It's time to talk.
There's going to have to be a really, now the term is an adult conversation.
Have an adult conversation.
Sit down and have a real discussion, an adult conversation.
Time for us as Americans to have an adult conversation with each other.
No yelling, no screaming.
We need to have an adult discussion.
Really an adult conversation.
An adult conversation.
About a very serious subject.
When the commission voted yesterday on its new proposal to reduce the deficit, only 11 members said yes. 14 were needed to send a fast-track plan to Congress. Representative Jan Schakowsky, an Illinois Democrat, was one of the holdouts.
What I felt was that the way that we achieved deficit and debt reduction just gave too big a hit to the middle class. I had offered my own proposal that would achieve primary budget balance, one of our assignments from the president, by 2015, but I did it without further eroding the middle class in America.
So give us two recommendations that you disagreed with and why.
Well, I certainly felt that charging out-of-pocket costs for Medicare and adding additional out-of-pocket costs to the elderly is a very bad idea.
And this is the part of the proposal that says that people need to share more of the costs with the government for the Medicare benefits that they're using.
Except that the reality is that older Americans are spending about 30% out-of-pocket already for their health care costs. And to ask them now to pay even more costs, I think, is absolutely the wrong way to go. We can have a public option in our health care system, which would reduce about $10 billion in costs. And as far as Medicare goes, why not have negotiations with the drug companies for lower drug prices, just like the Veterans Administration does? In other words, there are ways to do it. without sacking the middle class.
Now, at the same time, Congresswoman, take something like the public option. I'm pretty sure this country just spent all of last year having this debate, and the public option did not end up in the health care law. It was deemed politically unfeasible.
Actually,
how can that be what you're putting on the table to move forward?
Because actually, the public was wildly supportive of a public option. So I'm willing to subject my plan to public scrutiny anytime, because we know from polling data that that people don't want to see Social Security. Another thing, they suggest cutting Social Security benefits. Most Americans...
Well, they suggest cutting future increases in benefits, and they suggest increasing the age that you qualify over the next few years.
No, actually, it would affect current beneficiaries, because one of the things that they suggest is recalculating the cost of living adjustment, the COLA, recalculating it down. So these are the wrong ways to go.
But were there any parts of the commission's report that you did agree with?
Yes, absolutely. The military budget was on the table. Simpson-Bowles plan cuts $100 billion from the military budget. I do slightly more, $110 billion. But I do not do it by freezing military pay or cutting military health care. You know, these military families aren't getting rich serving the country, and I don't think they should be the target of deficit reduction.
One talking point that our listeners have heard repeatedly is that it's time to have the, quote, adult conversation about the deficit, that everybody's favorite things need to be on the table. But, you know, the commission couldn't even agree on this report. So are you guys ready to have this conversation?
Well, I do think that bottom line, the commission has proven that fixing our nation's fiscal challenges is not mission impossible. I had a plan.
Votes for it is, it sounds like.
Well, except that, you know, that we're talking about an adult conversation, that we need to put this on the table. I think the fact, by the way, that military budget is on the table is not necessarily, wasn't a given when we began our commission. So I think a lot of the things that came up in the commission proposal will be useful and will be on the table. But you're right, there's still going to be, you know, partisan debates.
That's Illinois Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. Congresswoman Schakowsky, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Next, we turn to Arizona Republican Jeff Flake. He's long been one of the House's strongest advocates for reducing federal spending.
Republicans need to recognize that if we want lower tax rates, then we've got to look at some of these tax expenditures, some of the deductions that we currently give. You know, that's heresy in some circles, but we've got to do it. And I think Democrats have to recognize we've got to make far deeper cuts than we've been willing to over the past several years.
Is there anything that the commission suggested that you agree with?
Oh, yes. Their discussion of recalculating Social Security benefits, retirement age, I think it's just a little too tepid. We need to go a little stronger and sooner. On the revenue side, home mortgage interest and phasing that out, particularly for homes priced more than $1 million. You've got to do things like that.
Congressman, we're basically hearing that that things are really bad, something needs to be done, and finally when someone sits down and figures out what could be done, lawmakers reject it. I mean, what is to look forward to here?
When you look at our unfunded obligations over the next several decades, you know, about 85% of it is healthcare related. And when you have a commission report that really doesn't touch on that topic, then I think you need to go back to the drawing boards and be more forceful.
But I mean, overall, I mean, essentially to you, if that's the case, is this essentially a failed experiment?
No. Whenever you're talking about it, whenever you have more people recognize the problem, simply having people see the commissioner stand and say, this is something that has to be addressed now rather than later, perhaps that will help. But what we can do as members of Congress, you know, we have discretionary budgets that we'll deal with this year. And if we can't deal with the entitlements politically, then at least we can deal with discretionary spending. And that's something we can control and should control. And I hope we do. And if we Republicans don't, then we'll probably be in the minority in a couple of years. Because I think the country, by and large, is waking up to this. And the commission report, I think the major value is having the discussion out there where more people see it. But it's frustrating. I mean, I go to, you know, Tea Party gatherings, and some will talk about spending and then say, well, are you going to give me a Social Security COLA this year, even though there wasn't inflation to justify it? And so there's cognitive dissonance out there with all of us, and we just got to get serious about this.
So are people going to get the what we're hearing, the, quote, adult conversation that they've been promised? It's kind of tough to see, given that the commission barely got their report out the door.
I hope so. We're going to have to. We are headed toward a fiscal cliff. We're going to be Greece before too long. I think Congress seems to have the political courage only when we're right at that cliff. The difficulty is we don't know where that cliff really is. It's, the next time we have a treasury auction and have no buyers, or something else will precipitate a crisis. And that, I think, is what behooves us to move forcefully very soon, so that we don't hit that cliff while we're wandering about in the dark. So I really commend the commissioners for addressing some tough topics and getting these ideas out there. And I hope all of us will recognize we need to move further and faster than people have proposed so far.
That's Republican Congressman Jeff Flake. Congressman Flake, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Guy Raz. The November jobs report came out this morning. Expectations had been building all week. Economists predicted a turning point, anticipating strong job creation that would start bringing down the unemployment rate. Well, that's not the way it worked out. The U.S. economy added only 39,000 jobs last month, and the unemployment rate ticked up, not down, to 9.8%. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
The government says there are more than 15 million Americans who are unemployed. And on top of that, there are always thousands more people entering the workforce. Young people looking for a job for the first time, or discouraged older workers who start looking again. So bringing down the unemployment rate is kind of like trying to swim upstream against the current. And in November, the economy lost headway.
Right now, we're not swimming fast enough to accelerate.
David Kotak is chief economist at the investment firm Cumberland Advisors.
There's a dynamic going on in this labor force. You need 120 or 130,000 net new private sector jobs each and every month just to keep up with the demographic change in the country. We haven't even reached the level which holds things steady.
That's why the unemployment rate went up. In November, we couldn't even tread water.
The hope had built up for the last few months that we were getting there. And this report said, not yet.
There's a chance that this report will be revised upward and isn't as bad as it looks. And there are other indicators that suggest that the economy is improving, although slowly. To get a sense of what employers out there are thinking, throughout the downturn, we've been checking in with Fred Pierce. He runs a factory in Londonderry, New Hampshire, called Metalworks. It makes all kinds of parts out of sheet metal. And he says he's actually feeling a little more hopeful these days.
Yeah, things have gotten a little bit better. I hate to say that things are much better, but we're encouraged by less sideways movement in our business and maybe a little bit of an uptick.
That's not exactly an enthusiastic, off-to-the-races sort of optimism, and accordingly, many businesses like this one have started to hire, but not that much. Pierce had to lay off nearly half of his workforce during the recession, and he's been hiring people back a few at a time. And it sounds like he's getting close to doing some more hiring again soon.
Yeah, we've been interviewing probably five people a week over the last, since the beginning of November. We haven't hired anybody yet.
So what's stopping you from pulling the trigger and hiring a lot of those people that you're interviewing?
Well, it's a one word, uncertainty. It's still very difficult for us to project what our sales are going to look like in 2011.
That persistent uncertainty across a range of industries is keeping a lot of Americans out of work. Even people with college degrees are having trouble, with 1 in 20 unable to find work. Economist David Kotak.
When you dig into this employment report, 1 out of 8 women who head a household with no spouse, that's the single mom with kids, 1 out of 8 is unemployed, looking for work, highly motivated to find income to feed the family, and cannot find a job.
Couple that with the length of this ongoing and painfully slow recovery, and it's clear that the country is facing more economic hardship for working class people than it's seen in a very long time. Richard Freeman is a labor economist at Harvard.
I mean, the last time we had big unemployment, the early 80s, the Reagan period, that's when we had a big burst of homelessness. We've already seen big use of our food pantries. It's not just a normal recession.
But at the same time, with every month that goes by, there are signs that the underlying economy is improving. Back on the factory floor at Metalworks, CEO Fred Pierce says several different industries he makes metal parts for are placing more orders, and he is getting more confident.
We did buy one new piece of equipment last month. Oh, it cost about $150,000.
Economist Richard Freeman thinks that the government needs to be doing all it can right now to come up with tax credits or other incentives to help push business owners like Pierce over the hump to jumpstart their pace of hiring. Chris Arnold, NPR News, Boston.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Robert Siegel. It was a bold and controversial plan to slash deficits and curb the nation's ballooning debt. But it failed today to win enough votes to automatically send it to Congress. The plan, developed by a bipartisan presidential commission, did get backing from a majority of its members. As NPR's John Itzde reports, the biggest surprise was the support it got from both conservative and progressive senators.
The 18-member presidential commission, co-chaired by former Senator Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles, a former chief of staff in the Clinton White House, included 12 members of Congress, six from each party. One of the last to reveal his vote was Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, a member of the Democratic leadership. Durbin had been cool to the plan at the commission's meeting on Wednesday, arguing it required too much sacrifice from the needy and vulnerable. But late yesterday, he announced his support. And the reaction was swift, he told his commission colleagues at their final meeting today.
I've received a few phone calls in the last 24 hours.
The calls were from friends and supporters asking why a progressive like Durbin would vote for this deficit commission report that cuts spending overall, including in Medicare, and raises the Social Security retirement age.
Well, here's why. I believe that politicians on the left and the right, Democrats and Republicans, have to acknowledge the deficit crisis our nation faces. When we borrow 40 cents out of every dollar we spend, whether it's in the Pentagon or for food stamps, that's unsustainable.
Somewhat surprisingly, the commission's plan also gained support from two of the most conservative members of the Senate, Republicans Tom Coburn of Oklahoma and Mike Crapo of Idaho. That support came despite the fact that the plan would increase overall tax revenue substantially over the next decade. Coburn and Crapo justified their support in a joint statement yesterday, saying that the debt crisis is a, quote, threat to our national survival. At today's meeting, Crapo urged the president and other members of Congress not to ignore the commission's work.
I have seen too many proposals, good proposals, that simply be shelved. And we've shown that we can get the supermajority necessary to pass this kind of legislation.
It wasn't the supermajority of 14 votes needed to trigger automatic congressional consideration of the proposal, but it was 11 yes votes out of 18. That's 60%, the same number needed to pass the Senate. But while five of six senators supported the proposal, five of six House members opposed it. Among them was Illinois Democrat Jan Schakowsky, who nevertheless acknowledged the commission's impact.
The main contribution of this commission is to say that there must be a plan for reducing the deficit and the long-term debt.
But Schakowsky said the commission proposal required too much sacrifice from the needy and the middle class and not enough from the wealthy. She developed her own plan, which she says cuts the deficits in a more equitable way. Wisconsin Republican Paul Ryan, who will be the new chairman of the House Budget Committee, opposed the commission plan too, arguing it didn't do enough to cut health care costs. But he said he hopes to see 85% of the commission's proposals included in future legislation. John Itzde, NPR News, Washington.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon, and we begin with a look at the effort to reduce this nation's deficit. President Obama's debt commission adjourned yesterday after voting on a bold plan to try to do that. That plan won support from a majority of members of the panel, but it failed to get the 14 votes needed to force congressional action. The White House says it will study the commission's proposals. NPR's John Itzi examines whether Congress can now muster the political will to rein in dangerous deficits.
For the colorful co-chairman of the Presidential Commission, former Senator Alan Simpson, and former Clinton White House Chief of Staff Erskine Bowles, the heavy lifting is over. They can head back to their homes in Wyoming and South Carolina, satisfied that they've put the dangers of big deficits and mounting debt squarely in the minds of the American people. But for the 12 lawmakers on the panel, the work is just beginning. Republican Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho is one of three conservative Senate Republicans who backed the Presidential Commission's plan, a plan that would cut projected deficits by about $4 trillion over the next decade. Crapo said not getting the 14 votes does create a hurdle.
We will not have the ability to force a vote on this specific plan on the floor of the Senate and the House. But it does not mean that we will not have the ability to move ahead aggressively.
North Dakota Democrat Kent Conrad, the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, said he'll use the commission blueprint as a basis for building a deficit-cutting plan.
This has the elements of what's required, and it has the sufficient size to stabilize the debt and then bring it down over time to a level that all economists who came before us say is necessary.
A size small enough to avoid the kind of financial crisis facing European countries who've let their debts grow to mountainous levels. Most Democrats and Republicans who supported the commission blueprint, which includes trimming Social Security payments for some retirees and boosting tax revenues significantly, did so with reservations. And the opponents, while supporting deficit reduction, all identified one or two items they just couldn't live with. Among the opponents was Jeb Hensarling, a Republican congressman from Texas, who expressed deep concern about the increase in tax revenue required by the plan.
If taxes are going to be put on the table, I believe health care is going to have to be put on the table. If health care is not on the table, you're not fixing the problem.
House Republicans believe President Obama's health care overhaul needs to be on the table because they believe it will drive deficits higher, despite official estimates that say otherwise. On the other side of the aisle, Illinois Representative Jan Schakowsky opposed the commission plan because, she said, it required too much sacrifice from the needy and the middle class and not enough from the wealthy. She argues the deficit struggle has already been joined in the battle over extending the Bush tax cuts.
Because if we were to pass tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, we're talking about $700 billion more to the debt. So I think that we are actually in the midst of the nitty-gritty of this very fight.
But ultimately, says Republican Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, members need to be willing to compromise and not simply seek political advantage on this important issue.
America needs to understand there's not a luxury for politics anymore. It is time for us to get our act together. We're really at war. We're on three fronts now. Iraq, Afghanistan, and the financial tsunami that is facing us.
It remains unclear whether members of Congress are ready to set aside politics, even for this issue. The fact that five of six senators on the commission supported the controversial blueprint is a positive sign. On the other hand, five of six House members on the panel opposed it. A reminder that the prospect of standing for election every 2 years, as they do, keeps the political imperative ever present. John Itzi, NPR News, Washington.